We will talk about the truth about girls and boys this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, November the 14th. There is a widespread belief that boys and girls have different brains and different learning styles. But according to our guest this hour, science does not back that up. We will talk about why they say stereotypes and pseudoscience are hurting boys and girls, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions about whether or not there are different learning styles of between boys and girls, and whether or not boys are better at math than girls, or whether girls are better at language than boys, and the like. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Rosalind Barnett is a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
And the book that you both have co-authored is The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. So, Rosalind Barnett, the so-called pink brain and blue brain, that boys and girls have fundamentally different brains, that is a myth?
Yes, there's a lot of press about this, and a lot of people are talking about this as if it's a fact. When the researchers have looked at the data, the studies have examined brain differences between boys and girls, they find very, very few differences at all. I think the impetus for looking at this is that if you look at behavior among young kids, you see great differences by gender. So boys and girls are involved in different kind of activities, and people just assume that, of course, there'd be brain differences that would correspond to these behavioral differences, but that was not the case. And so it's a very surprising finding and led to a lot of different thinking about the fact that, first of all, the brain is an interactive organ. It isn't a static thing, and the brain's change and behavior changes as his socialization changes, and that's really the difference. Boys and girls have very different experiences in the young years, and that shapes their behavior.
And so, Carol Rivers, why is it that so many of us have heard or read that that there are differences in the brains between boys and girls?
Well, I think it's kind of one of these things that you believe. You know, people automatically think, ah, men and women must be hugely different, so boys and girls have to be hugely different. It seems to make sense. But recently there's been three major books that looked at all the, you know, peer-reviewed research on the differences in brains between children, and they discover that from birth to puberty, the differences in girls' and boys' brains are absolutely trivial. And also interesting, from birth to seven, the girls and boys have exactly the same level of testosterone. So the idea that boys, you know, girls and boys' behavior is determined by, you know, different brains and different hormones just scientifically isn't true.
Well, what is the harm if we assume there are differences?
Well, I think what we see is people are trying to set up boy and girl classrooms, and they say, oh, the boy classroom, see, boys aren't very verbal, so we don't have to give them hard things to read, and they need to run around a lot. And girls aren't very good at math, so and they need to be quiet and sit close to the teachers. And in fact, we're setting up classrooms that will be good for some girls and some boys, but not for all. In fact, boys are not inherently less verbal than girls, and girls are not inherently worse at math. So what we're doing is we're sort of putting straitjackets on kids by using these stereotypes.
I think another problem that comes about with this over-focus on sex and gender as the primary difference between our kids is that you ignore other dimensions or variables that may be more important. And also you take the focus off individuals. In fact, we know that girls are more different among themselves than they are different than boys as a group. So if you sort of have a notion that there's a girl thing, a girl classroom, or a girl brain, you ignore the fact that a lot of girls won't fit that picture. And whatever you design for this, quote, typical girl is not going to work for a whole lot of girls, and similarly for boys. So I think it takes a focus off the individual and onto something that's easy to understand but wrong and harmful.
Yeah, for instance, my niece is a whiz at math. I wasn't a whiz.
Exactly.
Yeah, and but Carol Rivers, we still see people like the president of Harvard, was it, at the time, saying something about women not being able to cut it when it comes to being math whizzes?
Yes, and he said that maybe, you know, girls were not in, or women, and women were not inherently suited for high-level math and science. And, of course, that caused a firestorm, and to the credit of the president of Harvard, Larry Summers, he later came out and said, because he'd heard from a lot of his women faculty, he came out and said, "I got the science wrong." But I think that he probably was looking around at Harvard and seeing that there weren't all that many high-level women in math and science. But that has more to do with politics and the old boy network and who succeeds at places like Harvard than it does with anybody's inherent brains.
Yeah, the tests show that that girls are doing as well in math as boys in school.
There's some remarkably good studies, and some of them. One recently was done in Science, which is one of them, if not the most prestigious peer-reviewed journal that we have. So these are data on millions of students done over a period of time, and shows that boys and girls, the difference in math aptitude or achievement between the sexes is while very, very small because they're large numbers, it's statistically significant, and that's what you read in the headlines. But in fact, if you look at the data with any kind of an eye, you see that the similarities between boys and girls' performance on math tests is strikingly similar across all the ages, you know, as they measure through high school.
And one thing that I think is very interesting was a fairly new study showing among gifted students who are gifted in math, boys and girls, you find that the ability to solve difficult problems is exactly the same between the boys and the girls. There is no difference.
What about some of the studies that we think show that boys are more drawn to objects and girls are more drawn to faces, leading us to believe that girls are more nurturing and boys are not?
Well, first of all, when you use the word studies, there's only one study that's not been replicated that found that, or is purported to have found that finding. And it's a study that's been challenged on a number of scientific grounds. It was a study done by a psychologist named Simon Baron Cohen at Cambridge University in England, and it's been quoted in numerous places. If you Google it, you'd be shocked to see how many times it's picked up. It was a study of day-old babies that were propped up by their mothers, and the stimuli in front of the infants were a mobile and then a person, and they timed the amount of time the kids spent looking at these two different stimuli. And purportedly, the boys looked more at the mobile and the girls looked more at the face. But the study was flawed. First of all, the people who did this study were the researchers themselves. Secondly, the babies, because they were just a day old, couldn't obviously hold their heads up themselves. So the amount of time they spent looking at anything was a function largely of how they were held and the position that which the mother might have had the baby. So it had nothing to do with the baby's inherent interest. And many, many studies since then, which haven't gotten the same kind of press, have debunked that idea completely.
Yeah, so what's going on with the press, Carol Rivers?
Well, I think what you see is several things are happening. One thing is that we're seeing, particularly as newspapers downsize, as fewer and fewer specialists who really understand a lot of the behavioral science stuff, we're seeing much less sophisticated coverage. So that if you have one of these sensational books, there was a book called The Female Brain, for example,
mm-hmm.
That got huge press. It was on 2020 and every newspaper and every morning television show, and it got huge press, despite the fact that the British journal Nature, which is an authoritative journal, said that the book basically had terrible neuroscience. But it peddled a very popular idea that men and women are hugely different, and it's an idea that we're sort of primed to believe, so that the media coverage was just very, very uncritical, even though the book was very bad.
Yeah, the men are from Mars and women are from Venus. why do you suppose books like this are so popular and so influential?
First of all, they got enormous advertising budgets for these books, and huge media coverage. I mean, I remember one thing about John Gray, Barbara Walters gave him a 2-hour special, and on and on and on. He was everywhere. His book was translated into more languages than the Bible, and I think it was the second best-selling book of the time to the Bible.
And you know, it is, I mean, everybody agrees that its science is non-existent. He made up this sort of fantasy that, you know, men need to go into their caves and women are the caretakers and men aren't, based on literally no science, but this fantasy that he dreamed up about Mars and Venus. And it just took off because I think people, again, that's, you know, just like we once, you know, believed that, you know, the idea that indeed the sun revolved, you know, that the earth was the center of the universe, and people believed it for centuries. I think people have a long time believed that men and women are hugely different, and so that things that give that message tend to be received no matter what the science says.
I think it's also a natural tendency. If you go back, because it's a little bit less true right today, but go back not that many years, and you look around, you see women tend as a group to be doing certain kinds of things. They were the teachers, they were the nurses, they were the secretaries. They weren't the lawyers and the doctors and the whatevers. And the men, conversely, would do it. They were the engineers, they were the construction workers. Very different occupational segregation, which we still have, but not so much. And the natural inclination would be to say, oh, it must be something inherently about men that allow them to succeed in these fields. Similarly, there must be something inherent about in women that channel them towards these fields. And it wasn't a far cry to say, oh, it might be it's their brains, they're set up or hardwired, another buzzword, to do these various things. But we've become much more sophisticated lately in realizing that, if anything, you know, we're organisms and we interact with our environment. And the environment is a big shaper. So women aren't naturally suited to be secretaries. After all, men were secretaries for many years before women were. But that women were channeled into these fields because those are the niches that society made available for them.
Yeah, we used to do the same thing with race. For example, we used to think that blacks were naturally suited to be field hands and not to be university professors or, you know, Supreme Court justices. And, of course, we know that's untrue. But at the time, it was absolutely believed.
Yeah, and talking a lot of these of, you know, math and science and professions where maybe women are being held back, there are areas where boys could be held back as well, including the belief that boys and men are not as good of with people as women, that they are not nurturers as women are.
One point that you may raise that I'd like to elaborate on a bit, I think, yes, boys and girls are held back by social stereotypes, but part of the toxic title of our book is that girls and boys start to pigeonhole themselves. You know, they get the message often enough, and girls don't have to be told after a while that math is a boy thing. They tell themselves that, even if they get good grades in math. They're less likely to think that math is for girls. And the same with boys. If you tell boys over and over again, in a variety of ways, some overt and some more so, that hard, complex reading material isn't for them, they get that. And then they opt to do, you know, action books or comic books or, you know, sort of pared down, dumbed down reading material. So it's society doing this, and then eventually we do it to ourselves.
Yeah, we find that we lose a lot of girls to math very, very early. It's by about third or fourth grade that girls start to see math as a boy thing, and they start to drift away. And unfortunately, a lot of the programs we have for girls are in middle school or high school, and by then it's too late. We've already lost them.
Yeah, and but didn't you also talk about in the book about boys actually do have the same sort of nurturing instincts, so to speak, as girls do?
That's a very good point. If you watch little boys playing a little girl, boys and girls, you see boys and girls are very similar. They're empathic. If a playmate hurts themselves, they want to go over and comfort them. If someone loses something, they want to help them find it. They're very, very caring. And somehow, very early on, that kind of behavior gets to be labeled as a mommy thing or a girl thing, much to the detriment of boys and girls, and all of us, actually. And that's a society writing its recipe for maleness and femaleness on these little kids and shaping them away from that kind of behavior. You do see it with kids and pets. Like, boys will be very caring of pets, just as girls will. well, that's somehow okay. But if it comes to caring for other little people, that's not so okay. So a mother might, if she has another child, might ask her older daughter to mind the baby or watch out for it, but may not do that for her son. So kids, boys and girls, may get different caring experiences in their growing up years based on the parents' notion of what boys and girls are innately or hardwired to be able to do.
And what we're now seeing with boys, as boys are more and more being told that they should be reading less complex reading material, they're more and more playing video games, and we've seen some new research that the more boys play video games, the lower their reading scores go. And then if teachers chime in and say, oh, well, we can't give boys these harder subjects, we can't give them anything that has emotion in it to read because boys can't handle that, then we're having a self-fulfilling prophecy. We will see fewer boys going into areas that require communication and people skills.
We're talking with the co-authors of The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children, Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett. And they're saying that the science shows that the very minor gender differences in the brains of boys and girls or the cognitive abilities of boys and girls do not require unique styles of parenting and education. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your thoughts on this. We're welcoming your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Tomorrow at this time, financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back for this week's edition of On Your Money. He'll have financial advice, some money-saving tips, and answers to your personal finance questions tomorrow between 8 and 9. On Your Money here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about stereotypes and pseudoscience, according to our guests, hurting our girls and boys. The belief, the widespread belief that boys and girls have different brains is bad for us, bad for them, and we're talking about why this is and what we can do about it. And we're welcoming your questions for them. And our first caller is Melissa in Oconto. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Hi. When I was in high school, I tended more towards the science and math, and I was actually pulled into the counselor's office and told that I should be working on other things. I was taking drafting when other people were taking home ec. So, and that's followed through in my life. Right now I'm going to college, and I am the only person in my program that's female. But I enjoy it. It's my life's work. So I have four girls, and two of them are still in high school, but with all four of them, I really stressed math and science more at home, but they could take whatever they wanted. I didn't push them into anything. And I think they are better well-rounded because I think it expands their ability to think, not just with one view, but they look at everything with several views.
I'm wondering, Melissa, did you tell that high school counselor to take a leap?
Actually, he ended up principal of the high school.
But it didn't deter you from pursuing this type of field.
No. Yeah, I took advanced chemistry and drafting and advanced math. And
yeah, well,
he never pulled me back in again, but I didn't listen to him because I knew what I knew. I knew myself. I didn't take his advice because it didn't even appeal to me.
Yeah, and a reaction to that, Rosalind Barnett?
Yes, Melissa, you're a very strong person, and it's wonderful that you were able to buck that very message from this very authority figure. But a lot of girls in your situation would not have been able to do that. They might not have had the strength that you had or the conviction that you had. And I think this gets back to the point we ended on before the break, that what are the penalties for kids of being pushed into these pink and blue boxes? If the overwhelming thought is that girls don't do this kind of stuff, math and science, then girls who do that, who are like that, are seen as deviant or strange, or they're you know, growing against their tide or their natural grain. And that's a real problem, because when you have a child, boy or girl, who doesn't fit the stereotype, they're looked at it askance, something wrong, we've got to correct this and make it right. And I think that's what goes back to our point before, that teachers and others would be much better off looking at each child individually. If you're a girl who is strong in math, and that would be just fine if you didn't have to fight these stereotypes along the way.
And if we realize, when we're looking ahead, that a lot of very high-level, well-paid jobs will be in all these sort of, they call STEM fields, science, math, technology, engineering. So if you're a girl that has a strong ability in math and you're discouraged early, it means you may be being tracked away from a very lucrative and satisfying career field.
Thank you very much, Melissa, for the call. Sally in Alma is with us now. Hi, Sally.
Hi there. How are you? I agree with your guest speakers. When I was in high school, you were encouraged either to be a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher. I became a teacher. However, years ago, there were studies done that if you went to an all-girls college, you were more successful in life than if you didn't go to an all-girls college. I believe Barbara Walters did go to an all-girls college. And my main question was, years ago, more men graduated from college than women, and now you see the reverse, where women are graduating much more. They're going into the professions, as your guest speakers had stated, which weren't available. And I wondered, why is that? And do you feel that maybe we are discriminating against men, because in medical school and dental school and what have you, are they taking it just based on grades, or are they discriminating against men in other areas? And one other thing I just did want to say, because I think this is important, and it does have relation to this. I was very impressed a long time ago when you had that professor from the University of Wisconsin in Madison, who did want to have the black boys and the Hispanic boys a school started for them, because we do have a 50% dropout rate in the Milwaukee school system.
Thank you very much, Sally. We'll talk about, she raises many, many issues here. First of all, she grew up where, women were, or girls were, encouraged to be in one area and boys another. But now she says women are graduating from college more than men are. And maybe the tide has turned, Rosalind Barnett?
Well, it certainly has been a lot of gains for women academically, that's for sure. But the thing, the problematic thinking is that it's at the expense of boys. The data really show that if you look at college admissions and graduation, that more girls and boys are going to college now than ever before, but the rate of increase has been greater for girls. So it's not that it's a zero-sum game. If girls win, boys lose, that's just not the way it is. But that's how it's presented, again, sometimes in the media, sometimes in very big books that come out and sort of make this point, which is a scary point. It doesn't. The fact that women succeed doesn't hold men back. So we've got both those things going on now. And the caller made another point I wanted to go back to about Barbara Walters and single-sex colleges. There certainly was some data back many years ago that seemed to show that women who did high levels of achievement were more likely to be graduates of women's colleges than not. When the other researchers took another look at those data, it turned out that the critical variable wasn't whether they went to all-girls college or not, but how many women faculty they had. And so that if you have, the understanding at the time then was, if you were in a all-girl or co-ed school, if you had sufficient number of female faculty as role models, then you had a better chance of yourself modeling those kinds of things in your body, in your future. But at that time, the women's schools had more female faculty than just co-eds, and that's probably changed now.
And by the way, the point she made about, are boys being discriminated against? In fact, what we've seen lately is there's affirmative action for white males, particularly in liberal arts colleges, because men are not going into liberal arts. They're going more into business and engineering. And many colleges are, in fact, accepting men with lower board scores than women, and they admit it because they want to encourage boys.
Well, there are a lot of books, too, that are in the marketplace that talk about how boys are now getting the short shrift in schools. Carol Rivers, your research says that's not the case?
Well, no. What we're seeing, for example, a book called The War Against Boys, which was by Christina Hoff Sommers, who's sort of a right-wing advocate. And she claims that feminist teachers are destroying boys, which is nonsense. There's no evidence for that. What we are finding is that, the real difference is class and race. What we're finding is that boys in urban settings, poor urban settings, who are black or Hispanic, or poor rural white boys are doing very, very badly. Affluent suburban boys are doing very well. So I think those statistics are often conflated to say that all boys are doing badly, and that's not true. Some boys are doing very badly.
Just to make another point on the same topic, when the focus again is on gender with respect to high school graduation rates, for example, and you can see that girls tend to be graduating high school at higher rates than boys, that's true, but the difference is quite small compared to the difference in graduation rates due to race or to whether it's an urban or rural urban or suburban school district. But those issues, like race and how well these schools are resourced, is much harder to tackle if you want to write the situation in it or poor educational outcomes in general. So focusing on gender is the smallest part of that whole puzzle, but yet that's the one that gets all the ink, and that's what people are talking about all the time. Not that it isn't true, but it's dwarfed by the other differences that are much larger.
Thanks very much to Sally for the call. Sally was bringing up a situation which maybe you have a brief comment on, a proposal in Madison, Wisconsin, to create an all-boys school for African-American and Hispanic boys because of the low graduation rates and the such. There would also be a separate all-girls school in association with this proposal, but it was thought that this would improve the student performance and the learning for the African American and Hispanic boys. What does your research tell you about this?
Well, if there were any data about that, that'd be one thing, but there are no data like that at all. So I think that proposal, resegregating kids on any basis, whether it's by race or gender, is a very bad idea. First of all, it's not constitutional. According to Title IX specifically, you're not allowed to do that. We know that segregating kids, goes back to Brown versus the Board of Education, ends up with separate but not equal. And it fosters more stereotyping and more separation than anyone would hope to want to have.
Yeah, what we see with some of these schools, where you have in inner city schools, set up, I mean, the Girls Leadership School in Harlem and some other schools have succeeded very well, but it isn't because they're boys and girls schools. It's because these schools are given terrific teachers, great resources, and there's a lot of parent involvement. So at this point, there is no data showing that segregating by schools by gender improves academic performance. Can it? Perhaps. But does it? We don't know.
Another call from Greg in Eau Claire. Hello, Greg.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for this program. You guys just reaffirmed my thoughts on gender conditioning and how society and parents kind of unconditionally or unconsciously, treats, boys in a masculine way and girls in a feminine way and all that. But peer pressure and peer conditioning, because their peers are also conditioned, puts a lot of influence on the child too, and I guess that's about you pretty much covered what I was about to say.
Well, I'm glad you called. Peer pressure also is a part of this, Rosalind Burnett.
Oh, for sure. I think one of the earliest ways kids learn to organize the world, which is a task for all kids, of course, is by gender, because it's the most salient difference between their peers. And if that those differences are made systematic, if teachers kind of constantly point out or make inferences, direct or indirect, that you know, boys can do these things better than girls or girls can do those things better, you start to think about categorizing the world in a simple way. You know, this is a boy thing and this is a boy's activity and these are boys' colors, and these are boys' toys. Then they start to think about themselves and others. So if you're a girl, you think about yourself as doing certain kind of things. And that sets you up to challenge girls who are not doing what you do or are flaunting the norms. Yes, it starts very, very early on. Kids are very unforgiving.
And we see also that parents, there's a really interesting study showing that kids were showed there was a tea set and building blocks. Well, when the kids were not observed by their parents, the boys and girls played equally with the blocks and the tea set. But when when boys were observed by their fathers, particularly if they thought their fathers wouldn't approve, not one boy went near the tea set. So and these, I think, were 5 year olds. So you're seeing that by age 4 or 5, kids are have gotten the message of what it's okay to play with and what is not okay to play with.
Isn't that interesting? I also heard about a study. And I don't know how old the children were. I think they're just itty-bitty toddlers, practically, or if that, where the girls were more likely to pick up the baby doll, and the boys were more likely to pick up the truck or the more masculine toy, whatever it was. And I'm wondering if you can account for that at all, Rosalind
Burnett.
I'd
love to talk about that. There's been a lot of work, and some of it's quite interesting. The inference from what you said is that girls are somehow drawn to babies and boys are drawn to these other things. But researchers wanted to say, what is it about a baby doll? What is it about a truck that attracts boys and girls and makes them think that it's masculine or feminine? And they did this research with very young kids, 3 to 5, and they found out that the kids themselves thought that things that were soft and squishy were feminine, and things that were angular and harsh and were masculine. And they took a typical boy toy, a gun holster, and a typical girl toy, a tea set, and they modified it according to these metaphors that kids were using to denote gender. So they took the gun holster and they made it pink and with rhinestones. And they took the tea set and they painted in camouflage colors and put spikes all over it. And then to a kid, all the kids thought that the gun holster, now that it was purple and rhinestone, was a girl thing.
That's hilarious.
And
I'm
the
sorry.
The tea set was a boy. It was. So when you say why do boys go to angular things, because angularity connotes masculinity. And kids at very early age, like 2 years old, already have some notion of what's male and female. So they're not responding to a truck per se. If you took that truck and you made it pink and sparkly, they probably wouldn't touch it. So that was a very important study, and it raises up these questions. We sort of assume there's innate preferences for toys based on some notion we have of maleness and femaleness, when in fact there's a marketing and product development thing more than anything else.
And, I was fascinated by an idea, and I think the Female Brain book said this, that when girls get to puberty, that all these female hormones come flooding in and they turn away from math and science and they turn toward relationships. Well, that sounds interesting, but when you look at the actual girls' math scores, if this were true, then at the age of puberty, boys' math scores should jump way ahead and girls should lag behind. And it's no different. The trajectories of math scores during puberty are very much the same. So it's simply not true that girls' hormones are moving them away from math and science.
Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University. Rosalind Burnett is senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. They are the co-authors of the book The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. We welcome your questions, maybe your own experiences, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, it's all things political. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn, talking with his guest about jobs, the economy, the latest in the GOP presidential race, and more during all things political from 9 until 10 this morning. We are talking with the co-authors of the book, The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children, talking about how there is no scientific backing to the belief that boys and girls have different brains and different learning styles. And we're talking about why these stereotypes persist and what we can do about them. Michael in Platteville is with us. Hello, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. It seems to me you guys haven't just debunked pseudoscience. You've identified a flaw in our very fabric. And, you know, I'm raising children right now. I have teenage boys and an 11-year-old girl. And, you know, I see these differences. It's obvious that any differences in our learning are superficial. And what do we do? Where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. What do we do about this? Carol Rivers first?
Well, I think that we begin to, as we said earlier, really start looking at our children as individuals and say not, oh, it's Johnny, he should be an engineer and shouldn't read, and Janie should, be a nurse and should read a lot. So I think what we have to do is, from very early on, start looking at kids as individuals and encourage their individual talents and not be afraid if our kids are going against, you know, if our daughter says, I want to be an astronaut, or, you know, our son says, I want to be a writer, and think, oh, my God, they're not going to succeed in those fields because they're not meant for them. And it's difficult, indeed, because in schools, you know, you're dealing with large groups of kids, and it's hard to treat kids as individuals, but I think we have to make a real effort to try to do that and not put kids in these groups which will, you know, put straitjackets on them.
Mm-hmm. Rosalind Barnett?
Yeah, I think one thing in response to Michael's point, which is a good one, that we all have to recognize that in our society, we all hold these gender notions. That's just a fact. And if we can, as parents and teachers and other people who interact with kids, recognize that these notions and do a kind of gut check, and so that you stop and check yourself. If you go down the toy aisle, well, why am I buying this for Susie? Why am I not buying that for Susie? Or why am I, you know, encouraging her to play with this and not that? What ideas do we walk around with and indirectly, implicitly shape our kids and start asking questions about where does that come from? Why am I thinking that? So we can stop ourselves doing what we all do in a knee-jerk way because of the society that we've all been brought up in.
And you know, there's some interesting research that shows that mothers tend to talk differently to their daughters and to their sons, that the way they talk to their daughters has more emotional content, and with boys, sometimes mothers tend to just do orders, you know, don't do that, do this, come here, do that. And that signal may be that if boys don't have a rich kind of speech, well, maybe that's the reason that boys take a little bit longer than girls to mature in their verbal ability. So if we start looking at our own behavior, that can be helpful.
Thank you very much, Michael, for the call. Let's see, is it Carly in Milwaukee?
Hey.
Hi.
Yes. Thank you for the topic. It's very interesting. I have two daughters, a sixth grader and a fourth grader, and they attend a Montessori school, and I'm really happy with the amount of math and science that they're doing, and they're very interested in it. And also, I wanted to mention that for the sixth graders, they get to go on a trip to New York to go to the United Nations. And so they start in advance with doing research on a country. And, you know, girls and boys are involved with this. And they're learning about complex issues going on in that particular country. So I just wanted to mention, that I think that that's a really neat mm-hmm. program yes. that is enriching for boys and girls. And I was wondering if you had a chance to visit any Montessori schools in your research.
Are different schools doing it differently?
My two grandchildren go to Montessori schools. They actually live in France. It's a bilingual Montessori school. And they've had wonderful experiences there in both the areas you're talking about, math and science, but also in they do miming and acting and very, very creative activities where they get engaged in being emotive and doing that in a constructive way. But, of course, the thing is that those are private schools, and what we want to do is bring that kind of approach, the non-gendered approach, to public schools where most kids are. And we bring the best of what we know from all these other environments to public schools, which is what we're advocating. Mm-hmm. Advocating a different approach is not putting these boys and girls in these straitjackets early on, even though we understand why teachers might need to do that because it's easier to manage the classroom. We know from a lot of research that it's really devastating for kids to have those experiences and the ramifications of those experiences.
Yeah. Is there anything parents can do to try to encourage a local public school to take on these changes?
Well, I think questioning. You know, why do you do this and why are you doing that? Because a lot of us don't question our own behavior. It's so much part of our DNA in this culture. But if you're a parent of a daughter and you see the teacher not encouraging your daughter in math, you go and say, well, why are you doing that? My daughter really loves it, and what's that all about? Maybe the teacher hasn't really thought about it hard.
And, you know, there was one interesting study that showed that if a female teacher has math anxiety and isn't comfortable in her skills on math, she passes that along to the girls in her class. And there was a study of a second-grade class where by the end of the school year, if the teacher had math anxiety, the girls did worse. Not the boys, but the girls. But the good thing is that if the parents of those young kids had given the girls another strong message of saying, you're good at math, you can do that, they kind of vaccinated the girls, that those girls who got that message, their scores didn't decline. So parents, by their own actions and their own messages, can counter some of these bad messages coming from the schools.
Our next caller is Wanda in Kenosha. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to ask?
I just wanted to make a comment. I have two kids in high school. One is a senior, a girl, and the other one is a sophomore, a boy. And in my situation, my daughter has been studying the engineering in the LEAP program, or in the Project Lead the Way, the engineering program, and my son has been gravitating to the arts in terms of choir and musicals.
Oh, okay.
And what I've noticed is that my daughter has had a far easier time of her choices and doesn't seem to struggle at all with it, whereas my son seems to be struggling somewhat with his choices. And
why is he struggling with the choice?
Struggling is an interesting word, but he seems to be debating, having some internal conflict about whether this choice is a particular good one for him. And I say that because it's coming up in essays in school, like, his choices around choir and participating in musicals. So I'm just wondering as to the societal expectations we have for kids, whether there's a difference that emerges through the gender.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I think that one person who makes this, William Pollack, who wrote a book called Real Boys, he's a Harvard's psychologist, and he talks about a boy culture in which boys are kept away from certain activities, and that may be what your son is struggling with, and maybe he ought to watch Glee, and see that there are wonderful careers out there for boys in music and the arts and creativity, and that this culture we have that pushes boys away from those areas can push boys away from, satisfying and economically productive lives, and we shouldn't do that, but what we do.
I just want to go on one other point. Your daughter is a beneficiary of this LEAP program that you mentioned. So she's getting a social support for her unconventional choice. And she's very lucky because a lot of girls who have those same interests that your daughter has might not have that kind of social environment and might not be able to pursue their choice so easily, where there may not be a social environment yet that supports your son doing what he wants to do. This gets back to the thing about looking at individuals as well. If your son was able to be in a place where the gender thing wasn't so powerful, then someone would be able to see his talent for what it is and encourage that, not worrying about the gender part of it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about how parents and schools can not provide these gender stereotypes. But Carol Rivers, I assume as a professor of journalism, you also would like the media to change its ways as well.
Yes. Unfortunately, what the media does is it follows this narrative and tends to promote this narrative. The media story and the scientific story are going in absolutely two different ways. And we see the media giving massive coverage to sort of these bestsellers that talk about Mars and Venus, while the science is going in the other way. And I find it very frustrating because it's very hard to change that and to get to media folks and say, you know, look at what you're, don't just look at the publicity that's coming from publishers on these big books. Go talk to scientists and find out what's really going on. But to date, the media narrative still supports this idea of Mars and Venus.
Jeff in La Crescent, Minnesota is with us. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I find this very interesting discussion. I was a math and science teacher for many years. And I would point out some of the smartest students that I had were girls. In fact, I think the smartest ones I can recall over nearly 30 years were girls. So I kind of dispute the idea that there's such a big discrimination going on against them. But I would point out the Diane Ravitch book, Language Policed, which makes a claim that you cannot show a woman today as a householder, a picture of a woman as a nurse or anything else. We have to show that all the blacks are doctors and all these people are, you know, not what they are. And we present a distorted view of the world. And I would claim that gender identities may be vital to continue to have a heterosexual culture.
I'm not sure I followed all of that, Jeff, but...
Do we really think that, you know, you're not going to get married if you're a woman, if you're a nuclear physicist, but you will get married if you're a nurse? I mean, I think that what job you have doesn't have anything to do with your, you know, erotic choices or your life. And I think that, yes, we may have some, we may sometimes overdo it in the PC arena, but do we really want to have pictures of blacks as Pullman porters and not as doctors? I think that what is sometimes trying to be done is to, where there are barriers in society, we try harder. I mean, it's not hard for a woman to be a secretary. So we're trying to give the message to women. Maybe we will see more pictures in the media or in our textbooks of women as doctors or other things because we know we want to break down these stereotypes. So I would not think that's harmful. Of course, we don't want to send the messages to women that if they're, you know, nurses or teachers, that's bad either. But I don't. I think these things have nothing at all to do with people's erotic life.
Let me take another call from Jerry in La Crosse. Hello, Jerry. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, thanks. I was thinking very similar to the last call. You know, in a way, don't we want to bring our children up to fit into the culture as it exists, to be comfortable in that culture as it exists? I am sometimes worried that, you know, we have this ideal in our mind that everyone should be free and everyone should be this way and that way. And we're bringing up kids that may be less comfortable in society as it exists.
I'd like to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
The culture as it exists is an interesting notion. Our culture, if anything, is changing very rapidly. It wasn't very many years ago when you'd be shocked to learn that women constitute half or more of the incoming classes in medical schools and law schools, and they're about at least a third in business schools. So we have shifting sands here, and one of the things that's going to be going forward necessary to be successful is to be flexible, to develop your potential, because the culture is, in fact, changing. Anyone who thought that you could only, if you're a woman, be a teacher, a nurse, or a secretary would be at loss to function in our world today. So I think we want to get rid of the gender notion, allow people to explore their potential, do what they want to do, and society is now so much more open than it was, there's certainly opportunities for people to be anything. Boys, you know, they're trying to get males into nursing now. Why is it so hard? We have a tremendous nursing problem. Because early on, it was the culture said, now girls do nursing and boys don't. And now we're trying to break that, and it's awfully hard. So we want to allow people to be very open so they can fit these, move into these jobs when they're available, and do it because it feels good to them.
We'll have to leave it there. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Rosalind Barnett and Carol Rivers, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University, and Rosalind Barnett is a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. They are the co-authors of the new book, The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. Thanks to Rob Farrett and to Bill Martins for producing the hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope you also will be with us tomorrow at this time between 8 and 9 for another edition of On Your Money with financial planner Kevin McKinley. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.